Vasudevaya Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 33, The Activities of Kapila. This is text 22. We're discussing the activities of Devahuti. Translation, O Vidura, thus always meditating upon her son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Kapila Dev, she very soon became unattached to her nicely decorated home. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here is a practical example of how one can elevate oneself in spiritual advancement by Krishna consciousness. Kapila Dev is Krishna, and he appeared as the son of Devahuti. After Kapila left home, Devahuti was absorbed in thought of him, and thus she was always Krishna conscious. Her constant situation in Krishna consciousness enabled her to be detached from heart and home. Unless we are able to transfer our attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no possibility of becoming freed from material attachment. The Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, confirms that it is not possible for one to become liberated by cultivation of empiric philosophical speculation. Simply knowing that one is not matter, but spirit soul, or Brahman, does not purify one's intelligence. Even if the impersonalist reaches the highest platform of spiritual realization, he falls down again to the material attachment because of not being situated in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The devotees adopt the devotional process. Hearing about the Supreme Lord's pastimes and glorifying his activities, and thereby always remembering his beautiful eternal form. By rendering service, becoming his friend or servant, and offering him everything that one possesses, one is able to enter the kingdom of God. As it is said in Bhagavad Gita, Tato mam tattuto jnatva, after discharging pure devotional service, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in fact, and thus become eligible to enter into his association in one of the spiritual planets. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pucharanini Vishesha Sunyavari Paschachare Sutare Omangyanam Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Viritam Jin Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Trupyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Chapatitanam Avnebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namaha Tameva Dhyayati Devam Apatyam Kapilam Harim Babu Vachirito Vatsa Nispriha Tadjigvihe. O Vidura, thus always meditating upon her son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Dev, she very soon became unattached to her nicely decorated home. Prabhupada said this is a practical example of becoming elevated by meditating upon the Lord, absorbed in thought of him, especially as you see with Devahuti. It was but intense because her natural affection for Kapila Dev was intensified to an extreme degree by separation, feelings of separation. Naturally, is the effect of separation is to intensify attachment. so that you may be attached to somebody, but if they're always around, it can become routine and you sort of forget, take it for granted. Then you're separated from that person, then you miss them, think about them all the time. So your feelings of affection, natural affection, also are increased by separation. So this was the case when Kapila left home. So she became detached from Taddushe Griheta, such a home. She had this Bel Air mansion equipped with all the latest products of enjoyment. Prabhupada said how it, everything is made of ivory and jewels, and I mean the text, marble and jewels, and she has a nice pool in the backyard, and lotus flowers. So she's still, this was all created by her husband, Kardama Muni. And also, he created celestial maidens to attend to her, so she was always being taken care of by his potency, even though he was gone. So she had all facility for material enjoyment. It's already been explained, it was not expected that she would leave home. But nevertheless, she... because it has to be taken care of. So here was the facility for her care. But she did not, she lost all attachment, even though it was very nice, much nicer than any standard we have today. So how did she become so detached by her affection for Kapila Dev? So Prabhupada says, unless we are able to transfer our attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no possibility of becoming free from material attachment. It is not possible for one to become liberated by cultivation of empiric philosophical speculation. Vimukti manaha, these people are liberated, but it's only mental. It's only in their own minds, because the intelligence, Prabhupada said, is not purified. The intelligence is still contaminated. So this Krishna consciousness is Buddhi Yoga. It's the purification of intelligence. Intelligence directs the attention and ultimately directs the knowledge acquiring senses. And so this when the intelligence and the senses go together, so they're purified together. Just as is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, how the intelligence becomes corrupted by lust. Where did, I was just looking for that. I think it's in the... they're different. Prabhupada said they're different. Where is it in the Bhagavad Gita that... What? Yeah, it's in third chapter. Thank you. Yeah, there's Arjuna has said, what happens if you decide you're not your body and you know that the difference between matter and spirit, and still you act sinfully. And he says, it's kama. It's lust. Here, lust means the more generalized sense of the term, the general avid desire to enjoy material nature. Libido. To enjoy everything. Of course, the prototype of that enjoyment is sexual activity. Prabhupada says that when one becomes energized for sexual activity, all the other senses become independently avid to enjoy. The eye to see beautiful forms, the skin to touch, the tongue to taste. So when the mode of passion is there, sexual desire increases, but also just the desire to be the enjoyer in the material world. All this is meant by kama. So it's lust. It's born of the contact of the mode of passion. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the living entity naturally has prema, a love for Krishna. That means attachment, very extreme attachment to Krishna. When the living entity, Bahiramukhi, when he turns away, turns his face away from Krishna, and therefore enters into the illusory world to try to be the independent enjoyer, that comes into contact, that prema comes into contact with the mode of passion, or comes into association with the mode of passion. And the example is taking milk and adding a curdling agent, something sour like lemon juice or tamarind. So the milk, when it comes into contact with something sour, acidic, it curdles. So similarly, love for God curdles and becomes manifest as the desire to enjoy in this world. It becomes manifest as lust. And the encouraging thing, well, it's very discouraging that lust is so powerful. Any of us who are trying to become free from the desire to enjoy in this world discover how appallingly strong it is. And you think maybe you've made some progress, and then you discover, no, it's still there. And you think you make some, try very hard to uproot it, and still, it's still there. Very, very strong. The encouraging side of it is, if that's simply the kind of inverted reflection of love of God, just think of how much we actually love Krishna. Because when actually this kama is converted back to prema, then it's also strong. In fact, it's stronger. Because when that prema is in the form of kama, it's always baffled, blocked. Because what happens when one tries to enjoy in this world is that actually you suffer, whatever you become attached to. Since that attachment is artificial, the relationships break off, and you always become disappointed, and there's hopelessness and fear, and you want to love somebody, but now you're afraid. You know, you've been mixed up with so many men or so many women, and each one of them has shafted you or something, and now you're never going to do it again, so you're never going to have to. But at the same time, the desire is still there. Practically everyone ends up like a ghost, full of desire and not able to enjoy a thing. So you cannot actually satisfy your desire as long as your desire is manifest in the form of karma, because it's destructive. It's not natural. It is an illusion. That you will actually enjoy in this world is an illusion. And if you're at all alert, you can see that people are not very successful in this project. When it actually attains its form of prema, then actually it can be fulfilled. It is fulfilled better than you could ever imagine. Prabhupada says that our desire to love wants to increase without limit. That's the nature of it. That it always wants to go on increasing. But in the material world it becomes constricted. But when it finally reposes on Krishna, then again it goes on increasing without limit. Actually, then you're satisfied. So it's actually much more powerful. So when actually this karma is transformed back into what it originally is, prema, then naturally one is completely fixed. So, but when one turns away from Krishna, that prema curdles. It becomes calm. And then one associates with illusory sense objects, become sucked in to birth and death. Prabhupada says in the purport to 37.337, the origin of everything is the supreme Brahman, Janmadasi Ataha. Therefore, the origin of lust is also in the supreme. If, therefore, lust is transformed into love for the supreme, or transformed into Krishna consciousness, or in other words, desiring everything for Krishna. Notice how Prabhupada puts that, desiring everything for Krishna. Bless me, desiring everything for myself. I've set myself as Krishna's competitor instead of Krishna's servant. Then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravana, but by doing so he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Here also in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, that's the Kama-esha, Krodha-esha, when they are employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. Krishna goes on to discuss lust. It is lust, Arjuna, which is transformed later into wrath, covers the living entity. Its fire is covered by smoke, mirror covered by dust, embryo by the womb. The living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. Thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Indriyani, mano, buddhi. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Jnana avritya. Jnana avritya. So the jnana is actually there, but it's covered. So these are the sitting places, the adhisthana. Prabhupada says, the enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. So the first thing is, one has to want to conquer the enemy. One hasn't declared war on this enemy and decided that I want to conquer it. Then you're not a transcendentalist. You're not even a jnani, what to speak of a bhakta. People who are thinking that they can be happy by satisfying this lust are deluded. They're called karmis or vikarmis, but not devotees. So one has to identify the enemy and then take a vow that I am going to conquer this enemy. So here Krishna is pointing out where it can be found. The senses, the mind, the intelligence. Mind is the center of all activities of the senses. And thus, when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. So that's where it starts. The senses come into contact with various objects of enjoyment, associate them with pleasure, and then through the agency of modern advertising, you hear of so many other things. You haven't been there yet, haven't enjoyed this yet. Your mind fills up. You remember. One of the more difficult things of visiting one's family members, especially during holidays when everybody gets together, is listening to the dinner table conversation. The last big one I was at, the whole conversation was remembering places they visited and what they ate there. So there's a remembrance. This is impure reminiscence. One has associated everything in the world with sense gratification. Or the opposite, but so you accept and reject these something, everything in the world. Either it will give my senses pleasure or not. And if it gives my senses pleasure, I approach it, desire it, want it, think about it, meditate on it, download it, or whatever it may be. Come into contact with it. And if it's the opposite, I avoid it. So I've associated the objects in the world with sense gratification. Therefore, every time I see something, I see it in an impure way. My very seeing is contaminated. And therefore, I don't see Krishna. Rather, I see things separately from Krishna. That is only in relevance to my lust. And so I've made my discrimination. This is good, this is bad. I'm all caught up in the dualities now. Happiness, distress, enjoyment, suffering, desire and hate, icha and dvesha. I'm bound up in these dualities. I'm not and I don't see even this material world, the world here, is, I don't see what it really is. Because what it really is, it's in connection with Krishna. But now I'm in illusion. I'm covered by illusion. So my senses are contaminated because my mind is full of all the ideas of sense gratification. It's the repository of lust. So, and so then my thinking, my feeling, and my willing is all rotten. So then, he says, intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and to identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and the senses. So here's what the progression is. Then the intelligence becomes contaminated. In other words, one's whole focus of one's entire long-term aspirations and goals and his whole mentality, his way of thinking, feeling, and willing in terms of sense gratification has become cemented in by the intelligence. The intelligence is diverted. One's whole attention is completely now diverted to material enjoyment, is what it means by lusty intelligence. It's described as the immediate next door neighbor of the spirit soul. And it's this intelligence which influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego. In other words, to forget who I am. When the attention is focused now on matter and enjoying matter, then I cannot remember that I am, all my jnana, my knowledge, who I am, who Krishna is, what this world is, it's wiped out. It's erased. It's erased. Your whole hard disk is reformatted. Disappears. It's completely unrecoverable. Like that. And so he acquires the false ego and identify with matter, the mind, and the senses. That's what the false ego is. It's the self-identification of spirit soul with the external energy. So I am the body, the mind, and the senses. This is me. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. And you'd think that someone's subjective report, I am happy, is reliable, but it is not. It is false happiness. And when there's a taste of true happiness again, one can recognize this. Oh, I mistook this for happiness. So this is how it takes place. How lust actually works. It is jnana vijnana nashanam, the next verse, the destroyer of jnana and vijnana. Knowledge and self-realization, both theoretical and practical. He calls this jnana vijnana nashanam. So, the affection or desire has to be again connected with Krishna. So Devahuti is an illustration of the naturalness of natural way by which this happens with bhakti yoga. Her position is that, of course, the Lord is her son. So as a mother, she naturally has a strong attachment to her son. And because her son happened to be a Kapila, that natural attraction to her own son became attraction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so instead of that attachment binding her, that attachment liberated her. So that even though she was expected to be an enjoyer, being a princess, and in spite of the fact that she had all facility for enjoyment, she naturally lost her desire to enjoy these things. It wasn't like she was somebody who becomes spiritual because, oh well, you blew it in the material world, you might as well try spiritual life. She didn't. She had everything already there, all facility. Still, she lost her affection or her attachment to all these things by because her intelligence was purified. So by bhakti, the senses are redirected. Now, of course, we may say, well, you know, what can I do? I don't have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as my son. No, we're not in the same position exactly as Devahuti. But the principle applies. The same principle applies of transferring one's attachment. And in this case, the Lord has appeared to us in so many different ways to be available to our sense perception. If we do not take advantage of this, we've wasted our lives. We have the opportunity, because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, we have the opportunity to absorb our senses in Krishna. Because he's appeared in the form of the holy name, he appears in the form of the deity, he appears in the form of prasadam, he appears in the form of Bhagavatam, he appears in the form of Bhagavad Gita. So we have quite a bit of facility. It's all there to be absorbed in Krishna with our senses. This way the mind the senses become purified, the intelligence also becomes purified. One can think of Krishna all the time. Kirtaniya sadhanaridhi, completely. Later on in this text, it's explained by Prabhupada that when one, you may worry, well, if I think of Krishna all the time, how's my body and all those things going to be taken care of? No problem. Krishna takes care of it. You don't have to worry about that. So that even Devahuti was nicely maintained. She didn't have to worry about it. And Prabhupada says that Krishna will do this for everybody. You don't. Ma suchaha means you don't have to worry. You can surrender to me completely, and you don't have to worry. So one should become in this way fully absorbed in the service of Krishna. And the devotee adopts the devotional process, hearing about the Supreme Lord's pastimes and glorifying his activities and thereby always remembering his beautiful eternal form. So this is the facility that we have. It's really made available by Lord Chaitanya, this natural process, because otherwise Krishna is not usually so available to people with materially contaminated senses. But of course, one has to take up the process seriously. That is to say, one really has to have the determined effort to follow our practice of chanting the holy name while trying to give up offenses, with desiring to become free from material attachments. If I'm chanting Hare Krishna at the same time maintaining material desires, that's an offense against the holy name. If I'm chanting for material desires, that's an offense against the holy name. If I'm chanting and committing sinful activities at the same time that I'm committing sins on the strength of chanting, these are all offenses against the holy name, and therefore I'm not taking advantage of the opportunity. I'll be baffled, because one ultimately has to develop this intense attachment to Krishna, extremely attachment, and one has to want Krishna consciousness more than you want anything else. And in fact, you have to want it very, very, very badly. The same way that a hungry person wants to eat. One has to actually desire Krishna consciousness with the same intensity. Pray to Krishna always to become free from the. Therefore, then one should now be attached to Krishna and detached to matter, but adverse. One actually should become adverse to sense gratification. As far as desire and hate goes, one should view sense gratification and material desires as one's enemy. Here the enemy is lust, which causes us to desire and hate in the wrong way. Now we should hate that desire to enjoy in the material world, and identify that as the enemy. That's the Hiranyakashipu in the heart, whom we prayed in the Sringa, Hridayena Sringa, to please destroy this, my Hiranyakashipu-like desires to enjoy in this world. Karmasayanandayarandayatamograsagrasa. Please destroy this karmasayan, this hard knot of fruit of desire. Drive out this ignorance. Please come and sit in my heart and destroy this Hiranyakashipu. Certainly he can destroy, Krishna can destroy this, because Krishna is much more powerful. But our problem is we tend not to pray too eagerly for this sometimes, because we're a little afraid what will happen if I become Krishna conscious. You don't have to worry, but still we have our illusions. Yes, so this is our path of Krishna consciousness, to actually make up our minds to get on it, because then all facility is there. And it's as natural for us in our position as it was for Devahuti. We do not have to literally have the Supreme Lord as our son to transform or to transfer our desires. The same facility is there in Bhakti Yoga, because Krishna will become present to us in the appropriate ways and the appropriate degrees. He takes charge of the devotee once the devotee is surrendered. Not surrendered means I'm taking charge, and so Krishna hangs back and waits for us to realize who should be in charge. So that's our facility. So Devahuti shows that somebody who's ordinarily not considered eligible, a woman, because of the necessity of being protected, because of having to stay at home, because of naturally becoming very attached to children and family members and so on, like that. That seems to be the biological programming of women, or those souls in women's bodies, we should say, the biological programming, different biological programming for those in male bodies. But anyway, that immersion in the material world in that particular way usually makes it more difficult for renunciation and detachment. In this day and age, you don't see any difference between men and women because everybody is attached and immersed in material nature completely. So she's an example of how even though one is completely involved and entangled in a material situation, still by the method of devotional service, one can become liberated and pure devotee. Any questions? Yes.
Do you have necessity to do a specific service? How can you discriminate whether or not that intensity is still just a desire to enjoy by doing that particular service, whether or not it takes a long
time? Well, you should put it before somebody else more advanced and ask them. You should always be suspicious. And the principle is, do I want to do this particular service because it's depends on how it comes, and it depends upon whether you should see whether it's selfish or not. Because one should be open to see from Krishna, what do you want me to do? The Kinkara attitude is not, I want to do this service. Well, you may confess to it, I would like to do this service. I have this desire to do this service, but what do you want me to do? Not that I'm going to now impose my desire upon you. You know me better than maybe I don't know myself ever, so what do you want me to do? And at least my own experience is if one has the idea, what do you want me to do? You'll find out. Because maybe I want to do some particular service to Krishna, but maybe Krishna knows me better than I do and says, yeah, maybe you should do this service, but you're not qualified yet. Maybe you have to do some other things first. Prabhupada said himself that he wanted to sit down in Vrindavan and just chant, but he wasn't pure enough yet. Therefore, he had to travel and preach. So he had that attitude that this is what I would like to do, but Krishna has me doing something else. So you should see what actually Krishna gives us to do. I may have some idea I want to do this service, but I should actually look at what is the service at hand. And have I actually done the service at hand that I'm making all the advancement I can make? Because the service I have at hand, I should take, it's given to me by Krishna, I should do it. Actually, because we should also understand philosophically, I can become purified doing any service. I may go on the altar and worship the deity very elaborately, or I may sweep the temple floor, but actually the opportunities for purification are the same. So why one particular service or another? Because I need to be absorbed according to my full capacity. Now I may think I know what it is, but maybe it's not. But if I have a service in front of me and I'm not doing that to my full capacity, what's the guarantee that Krishna gives me more service? because it should always increase. Anything I want to do, it should be an increase, not a decrease. What I want is not should not want is this service or that service, but really, ultimately, in principle, full engagement. So I should increase my service, whatever it happens to be. Okay. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki.